This is tape two of the interview with Dr. Wally Keller. When the last tape ended, we were talking about differences in students and also the commitment. And you were, I think, when the tape ended, you were talking about setting up a practice on what students do today.
Yes, it's a little different ballgame. Mm-hmm. So they have to be better prepared, and they know that. And so they're very serious about getting out and doing that. And most of them have to make that transition from an undergraduate student to the professional student. And I think that I had a good rapport with the students, and continuing playing with the Dixieland Jazz Band, I think gave me a little bit of a student's rapport that many of them felt I was kind of part of the crowd. And mm-hmm. So they would open up a little bit more to me as to what kinds of things were bothering them. Mm-hmm. And discovered there were a lot of things bothering a lot of different students.
Could we talk a little bit about your outside interests, the band? How'd you get involved with the Geriatric Six?
Well, my wife and I members of the university club, and about 28 years ago, I think now, we were out there for dinner, and a group of faculty showed up playing Dixieland. Maury Crane was the leader of the group, and I told my wife, I got to talk to these guys before we leave tonight, because I want to get back playing my horn or something. So I went up and talked, and he said, hey, sure, get your horn and come out and play with us. So I did that, and we're still playing together. We play in front of the stadium for all the football games, and we play other gigs here and there, and it's a source of great enjoyment, a lot of camaraderie, and of course you can't be around Maury Crane very long and not have a good time. So that is a pursuit that was my me time. So when other things came up, they had to take second place to showing up to play with the Geriatric 6+1.
Mm-hmm. How did you, was there a downtime when you didn't play the trumpet for a while, or you mentioned you had to get back to it?
Yeah, when my kids were born, mm-hmm. and while we were raising them, I would pick the horn up and practice, mm-hmm. but I didn't try to become an active group in that. I didn't, I was gone most of the day through mm-hmm. the week, and then to turn around and be gone to play a job on a Friday and a Saturday night didn't seem to make much sense to me. So that was a down period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, were your children involved in music? Did you encourage them? You said your mother encouraged you.
But. Yeah, my daughter never got real interested in music. Mm-hmm. My son became a drummer and played in the East Lansing High School marching band, and then he played in the Michigan State University marching band. Mm-hmm. And we always hoped that he might decide to go away from home someplace farther, because we just live 6 blocks from the university. So he decided that he had a chance, he wanted to play, and he'd been around and heard it all his life, and that was one of his little dreams that he satisfied.
Whose idea was it to produce a record and later a CD?
Well, I think that was kind of a mutual agreement. As you sit around and talk about what are we doing with all this, somebody says, well, we probably ought to record it. And mm-hmm. I said, fine. So Maury had contacts with the people over in the ComArts, and we set up a time to make our first recording. And we had so much fun with that, and had so much fun giving the records away and selling a few, mm-hmm. never made the charts. No. we decided that we would go ahead and then make a tape. Well, yeah, we're talking about a number of years here, you see. There weren't CDs back mm-hmm. then. Mm-hmm. And then when CDs became available, well, we decided, well, we ought to take the best of what we've put on tape and add a couple more tunes to it and put out a CD. So we did. And we had a lot of fun giving these out to friends and relatives and around the country.
How did the alumni respond to when you showed up at football games and.
Well, I think very positively. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we became part of the official party at the bowl games. Mm-hmm. We haven't been to the last couple, but we went as the official band to most of the other bowls, the big bowls. Mm-hmm. And would play for every alumni event that they had, whether it was in the Palladium or whether it was in the hotel or wherever. We were always available to play the music and play the fight song and get them going. So the response has always been very positive, and it's a lot of fun to have them come up. And when we're over there on the bandstand before the football game, invariably some of our students will come up and want to say hello and shake your hand, people you haven't seen for maybe 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So it's a good experience. Mm-hmm. We're hopeful that they'll go to a big bowl this year and that the Alumni Association will still feel that we ought to go along.
Yes. Maybe the Rose Bowl even. I don't know. During your career at Michigan State, besides the Geriatric 6+1, were you involved in other community activities? And
yeah, I became involved with the Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. the Cub Scouts actually, mm-hmm. and helped with the Cub Scouts for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And that's been my main outside activity.
I see. Anything with 4-H or
no? No, I was not a 4-H'er. Uh-huh. I wasn't raised on the farm. Mm-hmm. I've given programs. Programs to part of the 4-H groups, mm-hmm. but I've not been a formal part of that. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of fun involved with the Scouts, and my son got caught up in that, and then he went on and became an Eagle Scout. Oh. And now his son is into scouting. Mm-hmm. So that's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. When did you retire?
For the last time, I retired in 1987. Mm-hmm. 1997. Yes.
So you were brought back out of retirement?
Well, I was the acting dean, and I spent that time politicking and decided that that wasn't really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So I did not try to throw my hat in the ring to be the dean at that time. And I went back to the clinics, mm-hmm. became an ophthalmologist again, which I'd never really given up. Then there was another change, and Dean left, and I was asked to once again be the acting dean. So I told the provost, this time around, if I'm going to do this, and you're going to take your time looking for the right person, which you should, then you got to make me the dean. Mm-hmm. And so she did. And I then ended my career as in the dean's office, and I'm now dean emeritus, which won't buy you too many apples. But it's been a nice experience, and I went back realizing that there were some other things that I wanted to hopefully get done, and part of that had to do with the diagnostic laboratories. And to also help push a little bit more of the academics into the computers.
Mm-hmm. You still see that as an integral portion of the curriculum? Or?
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. and you know, it just has to be more and more. Mm-hmm. With all of the things that we can do, everybody said, well, when I said, now, let's develop a program here for, say, in dermatology. The dermatologist first looked at it and said, I really don't think I want to do that because I've got all these slides and things available for the students now, and there's not really storage space enough to put it on. And I said, well, yeah, but don't worry about that, because by the time you get it done, there will be storage space, the way computers are going, you know. Mm-hmm. That was the way it was happening. So he did turn around and do that, and now he has a very nice program going. Others haven't done much with it. And as I say, one person, Dr. Jack Judy, took a leave of absence and came back. He taught the business course, and he had the whole thing on a floppy disk. So the student just hands out a floppy disk and says, here's the course, learn it. What we're going to do in class is discuss it, which is a whole new ball game as far as being able to work with students. Another thing we did was we had a director, we now have a director also of the computer center. I said, look, what we need is a program that will allow the faculty member to, in the process of lecturing, want to find out about how am I doing and how are the students doing. So we designed a program so that now faculty can at any point stop and say, hey, here's a pop quiz. Not going to grade it. I could. But I want to know, are you getting my points? So here's a list of 5 questions, or 10, or whatever he wants to pop up, and he pops it up, and it appears on everybody's screen. Individually, then they answer it. They answer the thing, and it collates it immediately so that he can see the responses as they come in, and he can tell what percentage of the class is getting it or which it is not. Mm. He can also quiz them that way. Mm-hmm. He can give them their exams that way. Mm-hmm. So there are just a great many things that can be done, but it has not been extremely easy to convince faculty that they need to change the way they're teaching, that there is perhaps a better way to deliver their information and for the students to end up knowing more of it. Because the end point of utilization of the computers is that every student at the end of the class will have the same amount of information, percentage-wise, to what you want them to know. They will have learned 100% of what you want them to know. We have a third of the class that's going to know 130% of what you want them to know. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part that you want to make available, so that a student can go beyond mm-hmm. what you're saying you require for this course. And then, of course, we also set up our website so that we can be in contact with anybody could be in contact with us. And we were working on a way in which people could send their x-rays in by computers and have them analyzed and immediately reported.
When you came to Michigan State, did you anticipate you'd be here your entire career?
No, had no idea that I would be sitting here as I am today after having spent my entire career here at Michigan State University. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of colleagues that left and thought the grass was greener someplace else, got an offer that was for a little bit more. I fought down that urge and have never regretted it. Always felt that Michigan State treated me very fairly, rewarded me for what I did, as long as I continued to have some new ideas and try to develop things, that the rewards were here.
You mentioned some of the things that you found, talking with Dr. Hanna, forward-looking instructional technology. You've alluded to some of those. Were there any other things that just maybe told you this was the right place for you?
One incident that made me think about what I was doing was shortly after I got back on into the clinics here, after coming back from the Air Force. I think it was about a year later. One of the guys in the department was denied tenure and was immediately let go, because in those days you didn't have annual reviews and you didn't have much leading up to the time when you had to make the decision. You have to either make the decision now or it's too late to do it. And an administrator bit the bullet and said, I think the writing is on the wall that this person is not going to go any further, and no new ideas coming out of him, and tenure was denied. I hadn't even thought of tenure up until that time, you know. But that's the kind of thing that makes you think. Because this was a person that I knew well, and I knew him well enough that when I sat down and thought about it, I realized that the administrator was right. This was the right decision to be made for this department if we're really going to go someplace. And that made me sit back and think about myself and where I was going and what was I contributing. and how was I going to get myself in position to be tenured. But I didn't think about it long. I never plotted a program to say, if I do this, they'll have to give me tenure. Mm-hmm. I just realized at that time that, hey, what they're saying is, we want you to be looking at new things, new way, we're looking at quality, and we've got to have some hint that you're doing it. And I think that was kind of a driving force for me, to say, hey, I do want to be successful, and I do have a competitive nature, and I think that's the last time I ever thought about tenure and what you have to do to get it. But that was a very interesting learning experience. And then that boded well when I became an administrator. Could look back there and say, okay, now you got to make some hard decisions.
What do you see now in reflecting on your experience here, the School of Veterinary Medicine, 150th anniversary of the university coming up? Where do you see the future of College of Veterinary Medicine here at Michigan State?
We are in a position, it's because of these buildings that we've talked about, and because of our current facilities. Our facilities now, the college facilities for both the research, we don't have all the space we want for research. However, the new science building is going to give us that space. And that space plus the space in the food safety and tox center and the containment facility on the farm and the new facility that we have and the fact that we're all computerized, we are really, and we have a forward-looking dean with national experience, we are going to be in the forefront of veterinary medicine's contributions to the state, one, country, two, internationally, three, looking at and worrying about these changes in animal production, environmental issues, waste management, global food and fiber systems. This is a major concern. And there are lots of people involved now in looking at the global food problems in the fiber systems and how we're going to feed the world and how we're going to make sure that this food and that the animals producing some of the food are in fact free of disease. So that food safety and security is a major issue, and we're in a position to make sure that indeed we are recognized as a research and extension unit that's developing information and getting information out. We have a great staff from the standpoint of looking at all kinds of new techniques for solving the health problems of people's pets. And pets, we have to include the horse. You know, a lot of those are now pets. But the whole horse industry is interesting, and we have developed an outstanding horse center. We've got the McPhails, a very family in Michigan who have been into dressage horses. These are horses to mainly for Olympic competition, international competition. Made a major commitment, and we have built the McPhail Equine Performance Center. And we've hired the best veterinarian that we could find in the world, Hillary Clayton, to run that, which she's doing, and we already have international knowledge and recognition for that. So that's going to be a continuation. Thinking on that, one thing I failed to mention when we talked about the curriculum and changes that we went on, because we have a situation where we had an ambulatory clinic for years, where we taught students, we had vehicles that went out to farms and made calls, just like the large animal practitioner did years ago. Well, came a time when those animals are farther and farther away and more veterinarians out there to take care of them, and the practice changing from the standpoint of numbers of animals and where they were. So we realized we had to do something, and what we established with the new curriculum, and we established these rotations that they could take. Well, part of those rotations have to do with clinical practice, large animal clinical practice. And we have over 75 of our practitioners in the state that are adjunct faculty. And we put a computer out there so that they could all be online with us, and we gave them a software package so mm-hmm. that they could be there. And part of that was we knew the students, when they went out there to those practices, would want to be on the computers, and they would stimulate the old practitioner into using that computer, mm-hmm. which they've done. So we no longer have an ambulatory clinic running out of our hospital. These students, on their rotations, rotate out to these practices for 2 weeks, and they can rotate for another 2 weeks. And those practitioners are brought into the clinic twice a year so that they can discuss what they're doing and what they're teaching, plus they're on computers so that there's interchange between the groups. And that solved a major problem for us, and it's been very successful, and it has brought a lot of our practitioners into close association with the college. Mm-hmm. We do recognize them as adjunct faculty.
Are there any colleagues that you'd like to mention that you've had, or maybe that you hadn't mentioned, either staffers or that?
Fred Dirksen is the man who developed this program for the large animal.
Okay.
And Fred has done a great job in running that small animal department, in establishing this training program outside of the college. I tell you, there's so many, I'd have to go down through the whole list of faculty.
Yeah.
I have mentioned some of the older ones that were, to me, very outstanding. Mm-hmm. And we have collected a whole group of outstanding people. Mm-hmm. And I would not want to leave anybody out by mm-hmm. trying to list for you.
Yeah, you've been here a long time, too. Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project, and I appreciate the time you spent and also your insight. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been pleasurable.